I've been thinking we were very overdue for another podcast. And when I mentioned the idea on my Instagram stories, a few people said, yeah, that'd be great. And why don't you talk about the process of growing your business these last couple of years through the coronavirus pandemic? Some people got more specific, saying, could we hear more about lean manufacture, taking on staff? And I also had a request to talk about mental health and give insights into that as somebody growing and running a business, which we all know can be very stressful. So I'll touch on as much of that as I can. I just want to start with an anecdote from when I was a few years into running the business, and it's been around about 12 years now. At this stage, it was just me, with I think occasional help from a lad down the road who I bumped into playing football on the park, who ended up being my first apprentice. Anyway, I was visiting a local business, much bigger, established fitted furniture business in Sheffield, and I asked them if they could make three countertops for me in a vinyl wrap oak. I needed to do a desk that would also serve as a bed, so it had to have these removable tops in a little box room in a Sheffield terraced house. And I just distinctly remember talking to this guy on the counter, an oldish guy, someone who you felt was in a sort of steady job, happy to do what he was doing, serving customers as an employee. And then the guy in charge came in, the guy that ran the business, because he had to be asked about my specific requirements and whether they could do that. And the guy in charge he had such a frown on his face. He looked like he had such a burden on his shoulders. He was quite brusque and didn't really show much customer service manner. And when he'd gone back into the factory at the back of the place where I was, the older guy serving was quite disparaging about him. And he said, oh, he's always like that. He's so miserable, and a few other things. And what really stuck with me about that was that dynamic. And I think from being a young business owner then, one of my first responses was compassion for the owner, and thinking that the guy on the counter has a secure job, the business is providing for him, he comes to work and does what he needs to do and has quite a lot of rights. The business owner, now I'm just assuming here, but what I had compassion for was, I bet he's carrying a million and one tasks in his head, thinking about profitability, thinking about perhaps a machine's broken down, or when will it next break down, and carrying all these people that he's taken on as employees. And I certainly didn't have the impression that he was happy. Now, I acknowledge it's only a snapshot, and what I'm reading into it possibly says more about me than him, because I don't know. But I keep it in mind, because I never wanted to become that business owner who had overreached, who was responsible for many people but not fully taking care of himself, and who was not happy, though quite possibly wealthy, I don't really know. And I've often, through the process of business growth, yearned to be in the position of the employee with all the security that brings. Now, of course, the grass is always greener. So as I've grown the business, often somewhat reluctantly, because I should say I'm not a natural business owner or entrepreneur, I just like working with wood and ended up doing that. And it snowballed a little bit from there. But as it has grown, I've on many occasions had to stop and reassess, where is this going and is it going where I want it to go? And the most recent occasion, now fast forwarding to the very recent past, within the last month, was when I had COVID. My whole family got COVID. We were vaccinated, myself and my wife, but it was still pretty nasty. So we were isolating and feeling very rough. And this was late November, early December. Very busy time, lots of jobs that had to be completed up to Christmas. And what was wonderful about this moment of reassessment for me was I discovered that the workshop was running on its own. So Brady, our long-standing apprentice, who by the way is not the guy I mentioned before, he was my second apprentice, He had recently been promoted to production manager. And we've got a new guy in, Matt, who we're training up in CNC, but is doing all sorts of things in the workshop to help Brady. And we've just taken on a third part-time apprentice, what will probably become our next apprentice, a bit of a trial at the moment. And I think it took me being forced to stop to realise how far we'd come. The guys had the drawings they needed. We had a system for that where I'm sharing drawings from SketchUp via the cloud. I'd got those lined up, all the drawings, bar one, up to the end of the year. And they just know the process. Matt had only just been trained enough to run the CNC machine. Brady is and has been for a long time well-versed in all other aspects of manufacture and the spray painting. And it was fantastic to realise that I was surplus to requirements, at least so far as production, the nitty-gritty of production is involved. We also now have a fitter, Neil. So he comes and collects the parts, fits them, and it's just taken care of. Now, this has been the result of a lot of system building and investment of one sort or another in the business. And I do really want to emphasize as well that I'm not sitting here suggesting that I've achieved success, because there's a long way for us to go. However, I would say, what does success mean? And I realized while at home with my family that in a very meaningful way to me, I'd achieved a measure of success because I was able to let the business run on its own. Now, I do still need to be lining up the jobs. There's a lot of systems improvements I still want to lead on. I am still the designer. But a lot of delegation has happened. So what I want to share in this video and podcast is, I hope, going to be helpful to you if you're a small business owner growing a woodworking business. I think I can only share the unique things that I've done that have suited, or sometimes not suited, my life and my aims. So take from it what you will. I would observe that many of the people who I perceive as successful or becoming very successful running joinery businesses have got a second secure income in the process of growing it. I know a number of people who have a very healthy second income in the household, and that's given them the freedom to invest in and grow the business without having to make a decent living from it at that stage. Many, of course, also are thoroughly well trained and have worked in other people's businesses before running their own, which of course makes sense if you can do that. The way I've gone into this, I simply would not recommend. So that's something else that I want to say. If you're new to it, I wouldn't do it the way I've done it, because it's been immensely stressful and has threatened my mental health and my family relationships on a number of occasions. But sometimes that's how things fall for you. So I came to it later in life. I originally trained in architecture, was quite academic, but I always loved making things. And after a stint of voluntary work in Romania, where I saw the impact of teaching practical skills on young people to give them a future, after that I decided that I'd always most loved working with my hands and I wanted to do that for a living. And perhaps part of that one day might also be training people in the way that I'd been inspired by doing in Romania. So I became self-employed in my late 20s after looking for any opportunity to be trained, because I didn't really want to go out on my own too soon. But I found the options very limited. And if you're in that position, you may find that you may even offer yourself for free to businesses like mine. I get approached in this way. Somebody wants to learn the trade and they will ring me up assuming that I would bite their hand off if they work for free. Now, I don't usually, and they will then tell me that they've had a lot of knockbacks to their surprise and disappointment. And the reason for this is, in that equation, it's an unequal equation in the sense that the person coming to work and learn is going to gain a lot more from it, even if they're working for free. The business owner is going to be slowed down, distracted, with no direct benefit into someone who's probably going to then move on. So if you are in that situation, I understand it's very hard to get started. I looked at courses. I remember looking at a $5,000 carpentry course, teach yourself carpentry, become a carpenter. It was all promoted to me. You'll be able to earn a good living at the end of this. Really glad I didn't go for that because I think it was very theoretical and not practical. If you'll forgive me just doing a quick plug here, I am, as I record this, I'm about to release a fitted furniture apprenticeship training series. It's a multi-part video series that I recorded a couple of years or so back. Spent a long time recording it through a very complicated job, every stage of the process, edited it up, and it's now packaged up as something that you can pay to download and access with a lot of additional training material in an accompanying PDF. So do look in the links below if you're wanting to get into this. That was my attempt to give an insight into the process of making fitted furniture. Now, we have, as a business, have come a long way since then. That was me working out of my garage. And I think at every stage you're at, there's always a lot further that you can go. So I think we all have to figure out what is success to us. And when I was stuck at home with COVID, I realized that the most important thing is I want to create freedom. And that is the meaning of my name, Freebird, my business name. Freedom, which for me means the ability to spend time with my family without the constant pressure and worry of, am I going to make ends meet? Or is this next job going to be a cock-up that's going to cost me again? So the freedom to be genuinely present to my family, knowing that everything's okay. And you can go for years in business just never feeling that everything's okay. It's awful. And that has been my reality for many years. Just a constant sense that I'm not doing enough. That my income cannot be taken for granted, even in the way that my employees' income can, because I have rights, and they have rights and I have responsibilities to them, which I essentially don't share. And this was really brought home when the coronavirus pandemic first hit and we were all told to isolate. The British government offered the furlough scheme to employees, offered it also to self-employed and said you can keep working as well, but really left the company directors, the small business company directors, out in the cold. Now, I don't want to go too much into the nitty-gritty of that, and I don't want to sound too bitter either, but the upshot of it was that there was no meaningful support that could be accessed for small business owners. Luckily, in the sector that we're in, there was quite a quick upturn and more work than ever. And, of course, then the government bounce-back loan was announced, so we got incredible terms on a loan to keep trading. But I think it just really brought home to me that as a small business owner, I am on my own in many ways. And that is the way that it feels for many people running a small business. So if you're thinking of getting into this, please do it with your eyes open. And if you possibly can, then please create a separate income stream or establish a separate income stream. Preferably, if you're married or have a partner, if your partner has a secure, stable income, I would say that would be a good footing to take the risks that will be involved in growing a business of this sort. For me, my family circumstances didn't allow that. I have a disabled son who needs a lot of care. My wife helps in very significant ways in the business, but having a separate stable job at this time was quite difficult. So my additional income has been the online work. So I wanted to help the community and other people who were in the position that I've been in trying to get started in this field. So I started the YouTube channel with a view to one day possibly being able to monetize it. And the way that's worked out is I decided to monetize it primarily through the member site. So that's buymeacoffee.com/freebird. And I've dabbled with sponsorships and deals of one sort or another with suppliers and things like that. And I now say no to a lot. I mean, I get a lot of inquiries about one thing or another. Can you promote this on your YouTube channel? And it's not generally worth it to me, but it also means that I risk being in the pocket of a business. So I decided if I'm going to be in anybody's pocket, I want to be in the pocket of my audience. I want to cater to my audience. So that is my main business model for monetizing the social media work. And that has been, for me, the only way I could have got this far in the joinery business. So not having that other source of income, not being able to accept sort of less than living wage for my own wage in the business without something else to back it up, like a lot of other people have as they grow a business, I had to grow the online work. So there's been times, and still even now, actually, as we come up to Christmas, so this is 2021, I know that I just won't be earning in the joinery business. So I have this little buffer to keep me going. And I'm not sure if I mentioned it earlier, but as we've grown with the help of a joinery coach, Bruce, and the joinery coach team, and we have seen real movement forward, and we have seen a big improvement steadily on our bottom line. So our profit and loss shows an increasing profit. But in the midst of that, our expenditure has just carried on and on. The latest thing being an office container, which we felt we needed to get staff back on site from working from home. I mean, air purifiers, a huge, a big wood waste heater. That was another recent one. So even though our profit and loss is suggesting we're doing well, that keeps disappearing into investment. And so I haven't been able to personally take more out of the business throughout this whole recent period of growth. My wife takes care of all that, and I think she might just be nudging it up, but it's looking a little bit hairy as we go into the loss over Christmas. So again, just to emphasize that I'm not sitting here saying that we've made it, but we have got a business that is systemized enough that I have some breathing space. And I have the satisfaction of seeing staff who are enjoying their work for the most part, playing to their strengths, and really contributing to the business. And that's something else that I took from that when I walked into that local business with the slightly disgruntled employee, or at least disgruntled with his employer and the unhappy looking employer. I thought, well, I don't really want to run a business like that where my employees have such disregard for me and also such limited understanding probably of what I'm carrying. And I don't want to be in such a position where I am carrying stuff. Again, I'm inferring a lot into that anecdote, but I find it quite helpful. So another aspect of Freebird for me is giving freedom to the staff that work here to really enjoy their work, be satisfied in it, and be rewarded in it. So we're trying to take care of our staff, but building a business is very demanding. It's a long-term thing. You invest, and you don't necessarily personally see that return for some time. So that is where we are at. Now, someone did ask me about taking staff on. The first guy I took on, I didn't have any great ambitions for having lots of staff. I wanted to make things in the workshop with the radio on. And the first guy I took on, I bumped into down at the local park where I used to live, discovered he was studying joinery, didn't have a placement. I said, well, why don't you come and just give me a hand? Because I wanted to encourage him. And that eventually became an apprenticeship because it just made sense to both of us. He had to leave. He was from abroad and ended up having to go back with his family. But he introduced me to Brady. He recommended him as someone else at the college who was a good guy. And if there's one thing I want to advise you about taking people on, it's look for character over competence. It's much more important to find somebody that you can trust and rely on than someone who comes with all the knowledge and skills that you think they're going to need. Because in fact, the latter category, if you were to find somebody who's able to hit the ground running with the skills, that sort of person is quite likely to have a lot of ideas about how things should be done that might not quite be the way you want them done. I mean, there is the option, of course, that you take on someone very skilled who you can just say, well, look, go do things your way because I trust you'll do it right. And I guess we've done that to some extent with our fitter now at this stage. But that is a high value individual then. And I think the business needs to be chugging along quite nicely to then bring that person in and justify that wage. You could argue it different ways, but certainly the way I've been taught by Bruce and our coaching team is bring in young, enthusiastic people of good character who are teachable above all, and help them to share your the values of the business. And if they already have similar values, that's certainly ideal as well. And then those are the people that will stay for the long term and will be really invested in the business and become an integral part of it. So I think that would be my main advice about looking for people is look for good character and take your time, choose carefully. I think the other thing that has made the business work as well as it currently is working is systemizing. So everything we do, we have a process for it. We are in the process of documenting all of that. Some of it's still in our heads. Hand in hand with that has been systemizing, and I should say simplifying, how we do things. Because if every job is different, it's very hard to establish and document every single process. But we have one way of making floating shelves, bookcases, two or three ways of making doors. The method for that, in fact, has recently changed since we got a CNC. And if you look in the comments, the description below this video or podcast, I'll put a lot of links to my other content if you're new to it. And lean is something that you may have heard me talk about. Now, a lot of this I talk more about in the podcast recording with Bruce on his own channel. Again, I'll link that below. But I think the headlines about lean, which is a manufacturing efficiency process, the headlines would be in understanding and identifying waste. And I think these are the big things that have changed for me. It's a change of mindset. So if I look back on my old workshop, which I can do through the videos on YouTube, I am shocked now to see how I hoarded things that I perceived to be wasteful to throw away. So my view of waste was, it's a waste to throw away this offcut because I might use it. What I now realize is that the keeping of those bits of crap was a huge waste. It was a waste of my space in the workshop. It was a waste of my time putting it there and eventually taking it out again to put it in the skip when it all got too much. And it just very rarely brought any benefit, because even if I occasionally needed a small shelf, which I might have had somewhere, I had a great deal of trouble finding the part underneath the stack of waste. So what I now understand is that the most damaging forms of waste are things like underutilized skills in my staff and in myself, things like wasted motion, so going back and forth, when you're doing a process that you do all the time, that you could bring the workstations closer together, and various other ones, which, because I'm just having a mental blank, I suggest you look up the 8 wastes of lean. But in terms of offcut management, a huge change for us has been we now have 3 waste bays, which are vertical racks, and month on month, whatever offcuts we think might be useful, and our requirements are quite strict now, they have to be pretty large parts, we put them in the waste bay. The next month we move on to the next bay. And after 3 months, we're back to the first bay, at which point we have to bin those. Because if they haven't been used in 3 months, they have to be gotten rid of. Because that's plenty of time for remedial work on a job that might have had this particular coloured board. And that has been absolutely transformative. So that has been one of the biggest things, dealing with offcuts and not hoarding them, and having a system by which to deal with them. Related to that has been getting the wood waste heater. So we've got the WT5 wood burner, which we bought from Markfield Woodworking Machinery, who I do recommend. There's a video on my channel of them squaring up my panel saw, which they did in a very expert way. So we got this wood waste heater. And the great thing about that is that my conscience is really clear throwing away this board, because whereas before I was paying for a skip and it was painful, now it's creating heat for the workshop. wherever possible, those things just go straight from panel saw to wood burner while it's running, or straight from CNC to wood burner, which is a huge saving in wasted motion. I could talk about a number of other practical things that have helped our efficiency in the workshop. For example, the Kanban system, which is a way of managing your stock, so components, hinges, things like that, in allocated boxes in a very accessible area where you can see it across the workshop, not just randomly in a cupboard. And then a system of two parts to each box. So when the front part of that box becomes empty of hinges, there's a little card called a Kanban card, which you take out and place in the ordering area. So that's a trigger to order. And then there's a section at the back of the box which has enough stock that's likely to keep you going until the next reorder. Quite simple, but that has been transformative. Another very significant thing has been putting as much as possible on wheels, so using carts and making partitions in those carts so that when things are cut off the panel saw or the CNC, they stack in vertically so that you can pick any part off without having to route through a horizontal stack. We've made so many other incremental changes in processes, such as spraying, getting better equipment, setting up the spray booth. And these are all things that I will cover in as much detail as I can over on the member site, as we're about to launch the Pro membership. So do again look in the description below for information on that, something I want to launch in the new year, where I'll be doing series on different topics like this, which as a member you'll get access to ongoing. But then once the series is finished, it'll be taken off the site and packaged up as a training course. I'm very conscious that as you grow a business, you have to choose your compromise. So there'll be people listening to this. You say, well, I don't want to make something standard. What I love about this work is the bespoke design work. I love going to see a customer and meeting their needs, coming up with something creative, doing something different every day. And that's great. I mean, if you can make that pay, that's brilliant. Or if you can afford to not make it pay, that's possibly even better, because that's a sort of freedom. I wasn't really in that situation where I could sustain that for one reason or another. I just found that I had to systemize this business to the point where it could run doing standard work. And I had to shift my priorities in a way. And this is what I mean about choose your compromise. I think we'd all love to be uncompromising. So this idea of the uncompromising craftsman making stuff beautifully, finely crafted, the very best materials. Actually, that person, if they exist, has compromised somewhere. Because if you're going to do that, then you are going to have to be very intensely focused on each project, and it's quite possible that you are going to neglect another part of your life, perhaps your family, perhaps your relationships. To do things to this level early on, you're probably going to have to neglect steady income, but you may get yourself to the point where you really make a name for yourself. But I think there'll be a lot of striving to get to that point to then achieve security and the financial return that could bring the freedom in all the other areas of your life. But I think all of us do reach points where we have to choose our compromise. And I have quite consciously now chosen for the time being to compromise on some of my desires and passions to make things in a certain way. Because I couldn't make that work in a business. In fact, I began to find it very stressful to try and be designer, maker and manager. And I, in fact, just being a manager in general, I find extremely stressful and often a trigger for depression. If I have a few days straight where I'm just doing management type tasks and I don't have anything tangible at the end of the day to show for it. And by tangible, I mean I want to see something made. I want to have my hands on something, hold a tool, finish a bit of wood. I just feel good when I do that. So that is one of the biggest mental health challenges. I really feel like a square peg in a round hole, still running this business. And in fact, I will often say to people close to me, I hate running a business. And I do hate running a business, but I also at times love it. And even when I hate it, I'm saying that not tongue in cheek, but I'm saying that knowing that there's a lot of good and I'm really glad that we've got it this far. But I've reached a point where I started to find it psychologically disingenuous or even damaging to keep trying to make myself into a certain type of person or trying to make myself enjoy certain tasks. I find it very liberating to say, well, I'm not a natural manager, and therefore I'm going to work towards delegating as much of that even as I can. So my plan for the business now is to carve out a reduced role for myself as designer, because I do enjoy that customer contact, and for the time being CAD draftsman, so I get some satisfaction in that, although that can also frustrate me, and also general face of the business. And then I'm planning to get my fix of making and finishing by jumping back into the snagging when that comes up, so our fitter can get back onto things. I can just go back and resolve problems and take those pretty pictures at the end of the job. And then ultimately, step back even perhaps a little bit more, or at least make that really just perhaps a 2-day-a-week role. And in the other time, get back to just making things without all that pressure of, have I priced it right? Take on some jobs where I'll say to the guys, okay, this is just for me to do. I'm going to take my time on it and I'm going to enjoy it. And just on the subject of mental health, which I was asked to talk about, I think you do need to constantly reassess what you want and what you want from the business. Not let the business run you. Certainly not let the customers run you. But keep stopping, taking a deep breath, and deciding how you want to move forward. And making sure that you do find a role that suits you. And there is a danger in thinking, well, if I can just press on and make enough money from this thing, then I can have the freedom to choose. Then I can have time with my kids. Or then I can do the things I want to do. That's a constant tension and balance. And for me, being struck down with COVID and just having to stop, it really changed my mindset to thinking, the time is now to spend time with my kids, because I do not want to lose their childhood saying later. So my view now to growing the business, and remember, we've not yet really taken more from it as personal income through all this growth, but my view is I'm just going to grow it as slow as it needs to grow in order to make sure that I'm getting my priorities straight, that I am stopping work at the end of the day and spending time with my son, my daughter, getting them to bed, not just rushing, not just doing a perfunctory thing because my mind is on work or my mind's on Instagram and rushing off. It is often messy. It is difficult. Something I just noted down here to say is, as you're trying to move something forward in your life, a business or an idea, just remember that done is better than perfect, in the sense of each given task, very often it's better to just get something done and out there than for it to be absolutely perfect and you can move forward and build on that. Well, I think I'm going to leave it there. And do give me any feedback and do feel free to ask me any questions and do connect with me on the other platforms that will be in the description text below this video or podcast. And if you're watching this before Christmas, because I should be putting it out just before Christmas 2021, then have a great time off. Great time with your family, and I hope that you start the next year refreshed and clear on where you want to go with your business.